All right, welcome back to the deep dive. Divorce law, it's a, well, it could be a real maze, especially when you toss in things like grounds for divorce. We're
Right.
talking fault or no fault. And then on top of all that, you've got all these huge financial decisions that got to be made. It's a lot.
It really is. And for anyone trying to like really wrap their head around how these pieces all connect, there's this really interesting case we wanted to kind of unpack with you today. It's called Reed v. Reed, decided by the Virginia Court of Appeals back in 89.
Okay, Reed v. Reed, I'm listening. What makes this one stand out?
Well, this case, it really shines a light on how the law understands this idea of desertion and the real world effects it has on things like spousal support, alimony, and how the assets from the marriage get divvied up. Seriously important stuff, especially if you're deep in the world of family law.
For sure. Because when a marriage hits the rocks and someone walks out, you gotta ask, when does leaving actually become desertion in the eyes of the law? And it seems like the answer to that, well, it comes with some pretty big implications.
No doubt. And on top of that, we got to untangle how courts separate, dividing up what a couple's built together. We're talking equitable distribution, so what's already there in the pot, versus providing financial support for someone's needs down the line, which is where spousal support comes in.
Right, so two very different pots of money. Okay, you mentioned Weed v. Reed. What's the story there? Take us back to 1989.
Okay, so picture this. Judith and Dr. Robert Reed, married for almost 2 decades, 4 kids. And from what it sounds like, Dr. Reed, he's super dedicated to his work, long hours, juggling multiple jobs sometimes, the whole nine yards. You'd think, hey, that's probably to make sure the family's financially secure, right?
Yeah, sounds reasonable on the surface, but I'm
Yeah.
guessing that dedication came with a price.
Exactly. It seems like even though his intentions might have been good, that dedication took a toll on their relationship. Like the case specifically mentions how their intimate life, well, it wasn't great from early on, and then in the 2, 3 years before they split, they had no sexual intimacy at all.
Whoa. Yeah,
Yeah.
that's rough. I could see how that would lead to problems.
And it definitely created some serious dissatisfaction for Mrs. Reed. But hold on, there's more. It wasn't just the lack of intimacy. She also felt like with Dr. Reed working all the time, he wasn't very involved with raising their kids. Basically, she felt like a real lack of, a caring, supportive partner in all this.
So it was about more than just the physical side of
Yeah,
things.
it was the whole package, the emotional connection too. And you know what? They actually did try counseling, which is important to keep in mind, but unfortunately, it didn't fix the root of their problems.
Makes sense. Sometimes counseling is not a magic bullet, so where do things go from there?
Okay, so at this point, the marriage is clearly strained. Mrs. Reed, she finally tells Dr. Reed she's done, she wants to separate. Now, here's a key thing. She then moves out of their home without him knowing ahead of time. It wasn't like they both decided to live separately, but under the same roof or anything.
Gotcha. So this was her making a pretty decisive move.
You got it. And then, just a couple of months after moving out, she files for divorce. Her argument, Dr. Reed's actions basically forced her hand. That's the whole constructive desertion idea in legal terms. But as you might expect, Dr. Reed, he sees things completely differently, right? He files a counterclaim saying she's the one who deserted him.
Ah, so we've got a real he said, she said situation brewing.
Exactly. And here's where it gets interesting legally. The commissioner, that's the first person who hears the evidence in these cases, actually recommends denying both of them a divorce on fault grounds. Instead, they suggest a no-fault divorce. But with Dr. Reed paying both child support and spousal support to Mrs. Reed, oh, and they also recommend he gives her a $50,000 payment and covers her legal fees.
$50,000, that's a pretty hefty chunk of change.
It is. And here's where the legal plot thickens. The chancellor, that's the judge in the lower court, agrees with all these recommendations, even though Dr. Reed's objecting. But then the case goes up to the Court of Appeals, and they have a different take on things, at least partially. So the puzzle for us is, why did the Court of Appeals decide against Mrs. Reed getting spousal support even after the initial ruling said neither of them was really at fault for the marriage ending? What changed their minds?
Yeah, that's a good question. What was the main legal issue that caught the Court of Appeals' attention?
The big question for them was whether Mrs. Reed leaving, considering everything going on, legally counted as desertion. Because if it did, that would have a huge impact on whether she could get spousal support.
So, did they think it was desertion? What was their verdict?
The Court of Appeals, they were pretty clear. Yep, they decided that being unhappy and the reasons she gave for leaving, those didn't legally justify her walking out, so they ruled that she had, legally speaking, deserted the marriage. And because of that, boom, no spousal support.
Wow, so a pretty big swing from what the lower court originally decided. You mentioned there was a specific test they used.
Absolutely. They had this four-part test to figure out if desertion happened. If you want to understand why the court ruled the way it did, well, this test is the key.
Okay, let's break it down. What were the four things they looked at?
All right, so first, the spouse who walks out, they could have a good reason to believe that staying in the marriage is putting their physical or mental health in real danger. Like, it's not just about being unhappy. The law is looking for a genuine threat to their well-being.
Makes sense. Got to be more than just feeling down. What about the second part?
The second part says that this danger to their health, it's got to come from either what the other spouse is doing or not doing, or from something outside their control. They're trying to pinpoint the source of the problem.
Okay, so it's about pinpointing responsibility in a way. What's number three?
Number three is that the person who leaves, they got to show they tried to fix the problem before they walked out. Like, did they try to work things out while still living together? This shows that leaving was the last resort, not their first choice.
So the court wants to see some effort, not just throwing in the towel. All right, what's the final part?
The last part, it's about their reasons for leaving. Did they leave because they felt unsafe? Or was it just because they wanted out of the marriage, period? The reasons got to show they didn't leave intending to desert their partner.
Okay, so four pretty specific things they're looking at.
Yeah.
Now, how did all this apply to Judith and Dr. Reed?
Well, for that first part, the whole feeling endangered, the court acknowledged that Mrs. Reed was unhappy. Like, she wasn't thrilled with his workaholic tendencies, lack of intimacy, you know, the deal. But the court, they saw this more as something that developed over time between them, both of them, not just Dr. Reed being a jerk, you know.
Right. So not some one-sided attack.
Exactly. More like they just drifted apart over time. And when it came to that second part of the test, you know, the source of the danger, the court couldn't find any hard proof that Dr. Reed's actions were actually putting her physical or mental health at risk. Like, she might have felt miserable, but that's different from a legal threat to her well-being. It makes you think, when does unhappiness cross the line and become something the law recognizes as dangerous?
Yeah, that's a blurry line for sure. What about those attempts to fix things? Did they buy that?
Not really. The court pointed out that Mrs. Reed told him she wanted out and then, bam, moved out and filed for divorce in like 2 months flat. They said this timeline didn't look like she'd really tried hard enough to fix the marriage before calling it quits. Like, they tried counseling once, but the court seemed to think more was needed before she just bolted.
So one attempt wasn't going to cut it. And last but not least, what about her reasons for leaving? What did they make of that?
Well, the court basically said that because she mostly seemed unhappy and felt like her emotions were on the line, which we've established didn't really meet their legal bar, well, that didn't change the fact that she'd deserted the marriage. They really drove home the point that just being unhappy in a marriage, even if you feel emotionally neglected, doesn't automatically give you the right to walk away without consequences. It's like the law is saying, hey, marriage comes with obligations that go beyond just feeling happy-go-lucky.
Right. It's not a feel-good, stay-in kind of deal.
Exactly. And they had this really interesting analogy to illustrate their point.
Oh, yeah. I'm intrigued. What was it?
They compared her leaving the marriage because she was unhappy to someone bailing on a business partnership just because they're bored or not into it anymore. Like, not because the other partner did something wrong, but just because they're over it. The point they're making is that in a marriage, there are legal commitments you make. And being unhappy without a legally valid reason, that's not usually a good enough reason to just walk away scot-free.
Mm-hmm.
It really makes you think about the whole legal structure of marriage and what counts as a legitimate reason for leaving.
That's a powerful analogy. It really puts things in perspective. Now, Reed v. Reed, it also gets into the whole equitable distribution versus spousal support thing, right? Yeah. How'd they clarify that?
Oh, absolutely. They were very clear that equitable distribution and spousal support, they're totally different beasts. Equitable distribution, that's about splitting the stuff they got during the marriage, things like the house, savings accounts, investments. And in their case, Dr. Reed's medical practice, the value it gained while they were hitched. It's about looking back and dividing up what they built as a team.
So it's like taking stock of their shared past. What about spousal support then? How's that different?
Spousal support, that's all about the future. It's about taking care of each other financially after the divorce is done. So in the Reed case, this would mean looking at the difference between what Mrs. Reed could make with her part-time job compared to Dr. Reed's doctor salary. It's meant to help the person who might struggle financially after the split, either to get back on their feet or maintain a certain standard of living, depending on the situation.
Okay, so one's about the past and one's about the future. Got it. What did the Court of Appeals think about how the lower court handled the money part in the Reed case? Did they agree with their approach?
Actually, they weren't too happy about it. The Court of Appeals felt like the lower court messed up by considering what Dr. Reed could earn in the future and how much Mrs. Reed would need for housing when deciding how to split the assets. They said those things are important for figuring out spousal support, not for dividing up what they already have. It's a really important distinction.
So they basically mixed up the two money pots.
Exactly. The Court of Appeals, they were big on sticking to the legislature's intent, which was to keep those two things separate. Like, what you use to decide how to split the existing stuff, equitable distribution, should be different from what you use to figure out future financial needs, spousal support. They wanted a clean break between the two.
Makes sense. They don't want things getting all muddled up.
Yeah.
Were there any specific quotes from the judges that really sum up their thinking on all this?
Oh, yeah. There are a couple of zingers that really nail their logic. Like, on the desertion issue, they said, one spouse is not legally justified in leaving the other spouse merely because there has been a gradual breakdown in the marital relationship. It's like they're drawing a line in the sand saying, just because you're not getting along, that's not a free pass to walk away.
Yeah, no more irreconcilable differences as an easy out.
Right. And then for the whole money situation, they said something like, the clear legislative intent is to maintain appropriate separation between considerations of spousal support and considerations of an equitable division of marital wealth. It provides for the equitable distribution of the accumulated marital wealth. It does not contemplate consideration of the future ability of one spouse to accumulate what will be separate property or the future needs of the other spouse. It's like they're saying, hey, when we're splitting up what they already have, we only care about what they built together, not what they might earn or need down the road.
Those quotes really hit the nail on the head. Now, shifting gears a bit, what are some takeaways from this case for law students or anyone really interested in the legal side of things?
Well, Reed v. Reed, it teaches us a few things. First off, it's a huge reminder that if you're thinking of leaving a marriage, document everything you did to try and fix things before walking out. That could be the difference between proving you left for a good reason and getting hit with a desertion claim. It shows you tried to make it work.
Solid advice. What else should people keep in mind?
Secondly, this case is a perfect example of why knowing the difference between the various grounds for divorce is so important, especially those fault-based ones like desertion. And then on top of that, you got to understand why things like equitable distribution and spousal support exist in the first place, what they're meant to accomplish. If you're writing about divorce law or taking exams, being able to explain these differences and apply them to real cases like Reed v. Reed, that's how you show you get it.
So it's not just knowing the terms. It's about understanding how they work in the real world.
Exactly. You got to grasp what lawmakers were trying to do with these laws and how they all fit together when a marriage falls apart.
Okay, wrapping things up. What was the final word on the Reed v. Reed case?
So in the end, the Court of Appeals said, nope, no spousal support for Mrs. Reed. They decided she deserted the marriage, so no alimony for her. And they also sent the whole money division thing back to the lower court, telling them to recalculate everything based only on what they'd built during the marriage. No peeking into future earnings or needs.
So that finding of desertion really changed the financial game.
Big time.
Looking back, why is Reed v. Reed still a big deal? Why should we care about this case today?
Well, Reed v. Reed, it set a pretty high bar for what counts as desertion in Virginia. It basically says that just being unhappy, even if things have gone downhill over time, that's not usually enough to just walk away without any legal fallout. And on top of that, it really clarified how we should think about equitable distribution and spousal support, keeping them separate and focused on their own goals. It's like they drew a clear line between dividing up the past and figuring out the financial future when a marriage ends.
It sounds like a cautionary tale for anyone thinking of calling it quits just because they're unhappy.
It really is. Right. Reed shows how individual feelings and legal realities can clash. It makes you think about what society expects from marriage, what counts as breaking those expectations in the eyes of the law, and what can happen financially when a marriage doesn't end amicably. It's a case that definitely sticks with you.
That's for sure. All right, well, that's another deep dive in the books. Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp.
Oh.